You're listening to Panel Borders, which is the extended podcast version of Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm Alex Fitch, and in this episode, I'm talking to Andrei Klimovsky and Anusia Schiebel, the artists and adapters of The Master and Margarita and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. First, here's a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner. FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
You've collaborated on these two graphic novels, Master and Margarita and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The last time I spoke to Andre, you'd just completed the third of three graphic novels, The Secret, The Depository and Horace Dorland.
Yeah.
Those were three books that you'd written by yourself.
Yeah.
You'd illustrated in this sort of high contrast pen style. And now the pair of you have collaborated on these two graphic novels that are in a much more sort of painterly, traditional illustrative style. So you've changed not only conceptually the kind of work you're doing, but also artistically. I mean, what caused that kind of break between the two sets of projects?
Well, I think each project needs its own method, different rendering. It's a bit like, I suppose, a filmmaker would choose a different film stock or a different director of photography to shoot a film for him, you know. And we knew the Master and Margarita was a book that we very much liked. Anusha was going to actually do it as a play.
Yeah, I first read it about 20 odd years ago, and I was going to. I was asked just to do. I think it was a fragment of the book, not the whole one, for somebody to do the sets and costumes, and I think that didn't take off, so that was the last time I think I really.
But no, we were going to do it again in England for the National Theatre, actually. And you know how these projects, you know, people have projects, ideas, and they don't always come to fruition for one reason or another. But it still was one of our favourite books. And when we got to know Emma of Self-Made Hero, we proposed it to her straight away because it is a favourite. And we knew it would be a good book for two people to work on because there are two realities, you know, there's the reality of Jerusalem and then Moscow and also the theatre, you know, the world Anusha knows very well.
because I studied in Warsaw, so it was very much, not in the Russian style, but it was in the communist time, so it was very funny, it made me laugh a lot, that book, and those chapters, those
theatre ones, scenes,
the whole, I could really understand it very much.
So we thought, well, how are we going to do it? And we thought, well, Anusha immediately knew she'd do it in colour, whereas I thought the Moscow things would be easier to do in monochrome. But having the whole book reproduced in colour gave the monochrome a greater depth.
But did you mean the style of the actual work? Why it's done in say, in...
painterly
style. Because you used to always work in collage and photography. Is that what you...
Well, that, I mean, that is one of the issues. Yeah.
But in a way, those are our roots, because I actually studied painting initially, and Anusha studied stage design, and you've always worked in
costume,
a painterly...
Fashion
as well.
Textiles,
so you've always worked in a painterly way.
And also, for me, the adaptation of a book, pictures into a book, it's very similar from a play to the stage, except that in a book you can put more things in than you can on the stage, but there isn't a sound, there isn't music, the words aren't spoken, so you put it
into... Well, I suppose it's almost like imagining a stage play where the actors stay still for 30 seconds and then choose another pose.
There's something of that, you're right,
And I never used to paint. When I used to do my work for the theatre, for example, I used to collage as well, costumes, fragments. I didn't just want to do straightforward drawings, and they always had to be from head to toe, because you had to then give them to the dressmakers and
see the whole body.
Yes. Whereas when you're illustrating a book, you don't have to do that at all. Although I have painted at home, and I do paint, this is the first time I've painted in this medium, which some people put down, it's pastel. It's not pastel, it's actually gouache, which is a chalky watercolour paint. And the colour, because it's printed on an off-white paper, some of the colour of my originals have faded. They're not there really.
Well, they're not as strong. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, was that a decision of your own?
No, we had to. We had the choice.
No, we prefer to have it printed on matte paper. It's got a sort of more sophisticated quality. A gloss is rather, looks more commercial, although it does retain the colour better. You know, the blacks are deeper as well. But
so we had to make that choice.
Yeah.
Well, we
were actually quite pleased with the way they were printed, particularly the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, which was done in duotone. So it does retain a certain depth. It's not flat, you know. At the risk of working in black and white, but with a half tone, then it can become very grey in reproduction. So we decided to do it in duotone, giving it a sepia. There was a black and a sepia colour, echoing the sort of Victorian.
Because again, that was done in pencil.
Wax.
The Jekyll, yes. And you were lucky because you found some paper, because we didn't know which paper to use, so that it looked good. And
it was from the Royal College. No one wanted to use this paper.
And we just had enough to use it.
Yeah.
But that was, I like working in pencil in that, what was it, crayon?
It was a wax pencil, a bit like lithography, you know.
Okay.
So it
was nice. Yeah. I mean, you can control it more, I suppose. I think if I ever had to do a whole book in colour, it would take me about 5 years, I think. Really,
well, you're planning one, aren't you?
Yes. But I think it was, and also, I don't know about you, but I really love adapting stories.
Yes. I think that Master and Margarita was more difficult to adapt because the actual original novel is quite fragmented. But that's what we liked about it. It's manic sort of tempo.
People have their favourite parts, and you didn't put this in, you didn't put this in, and you can't put everything in. And the story had to flow somehow. So even though there were some very funny episodes,
I mean, the original is like 450 pages, you know. So I mean, in that respect, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde was much easier to do
because we had to spread it.
Well, I mean, you can see that immediately with Master and Margarita. There are far more panels per page.
That's right.
And you chose a different starting point than the original novel.
Yes. I just thought it would be nicer to bring it, you know, to have him in that room all on his own writing, and then ending it, him falling asleep writing, with all the characters around him. It was a kind of nice kind of anchor, you know.
And actually, it seems a very kind of a Klimovskian conceit.
In a way, I suppose that's what happened in the depository. A writer sitting at his desk, falling asleep.
And also the frustrated artist seeing a woman walking by.
Oh, yeah.
You said that you met Emma and suggested the idea to her. How did that come about? Was she approaching artists?
She was, actually. She was approaching a student of mine. And she had intended some of our students to do Shakespeare in their own style. But it wasn't commercial enough. Our students are very artistic, quirky, very individualistic. And she decided to do the Shakespeare in manga form, as you know. But that particular student said, "Well, I can, you know, I have my tutor and his wife, you know, they've got an idea for a book, Master and Margarita, because I've always talked about Master and Margarita to my students." So I met her, and hopefully some of my students will be doing some work for her now. There are plans.
She's got quite a varied
scope. Yeah, I mean, her approach is very different to each author, which which I think is very exciting in that respect. And she's wonderful to work with, because once she kind of tunes into our thinking, the way we want to adapt a book, then she just leaves us alone.
Yes, which is very important, I think.
One good thing is that she gives us a tight schedule. That, you know, because we worked on Master Margarita for so long that when we said we've got another idea for another book, she says, "Okay, but I'll give you a schedule." And she said, "I've read so many pages," and it helped us actually. It really did. Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious in The Master and the Margarita, the delineation between your two work. But in Jekyll and Hyde, would it be right in thinking that you take over once it goes into Jekyll's flashback, when he's telling his own story?
That's my...
Yeah, that's what we thought. You know, that's why we thought it's an ideal thing to do for two people.
I like drawing people's minds, and Angela likes drawing architecture, which I think you didn't know.
You've always said that I'm interested in cracks in walls and not people.
No, but Andrew's very good at drawing architecture, and yet she likes...
Well, I'm interested in space, lot, you know, spaces.
You see it all. I mean, I did about... I didn't do as much as you.
But you've got a much more expressive way of working, so it suited that part where, you know, it's his confession about him losing control, you know, after taking a concoction of drugs. And that's why it gets more and more manic.
Yes.
But our daughter couldn't look at these pictures at home. It didn't affect me at all, funny enough, even though I think I would have been disturbed myself if I was maybe a lot younger, I'm not sure. But our daughter was very, she didn't want to look at them at all. They really scared her, which maybe is a good thing. Mm. I don't know.
Well, it is a horrific tale.
And I suppose the other thing was that, you know, you may ask, why did we take a book which is so well known? It's been done before into graphic novels and film adaptations and everything. And I think in a way that kind of freed us to do it very much in our own way. We didn't worry about style, did we? We wanted it to have a very claustrophobic air about it.
But the things, we both work in separate rooms.
Right.
So, Andre, you did your part, and I did my part, and we didn't really look at each other's.
Every so often we met halfway, you know, in the kitchen.
So our adaptation was our own. As well, the adaptation, but we had to do the adaptation first this time. We had to do our bit, your bit, and then give it to Emma, because I think they had to have the whole script or the... But I think that, and I found that if I knew in the end what I was going to put in, you know, on each we had to do the wording, the dialogue, and then the image, so obviously it had to flow. But I found that as soon as I used to write what was going to go on each page, the image would come into my head. If I analysed it for too long, it would just be wrong. So I just kept it as simply as possible. And I found that in the end, the first image that comes into your head when you're reading the book, put that down or try and...
I draw inside the book that I'm reading, so I have it sort of fresh. And there is a kind of intuition which guides us.
I'm sure most people do the same, but I know that there are happy moments when I used to work in the theatre where the director used to analyse and should we do this and the words and so on, and it would completely change, that in the end it wasn't anything like the original concept or something. And with this, when you're in, I suppose when you're in control of your own images, there's not much fussing about. You just do it, and hopefully it'll work that way.
I mean, did you have a set number of pages?
Yes, we did.
Right from the start.
We had to have
128. Yes, she goes with 128. Emma does. Although, had we needed to go a bit further, there's another sort of figure, like 140.
40, yeah. 144, I think it was, or something. Yeah, but yeah. Yes, no, we had we knew how many pages. That's what. So it was cutting out certain bits, you know, and then we finally had the whole script, or what do you call it? It's not a script, it's the whole manuscript. No, the whole, anyway, you know what I mean. Yeah.
Plan.
Of the whole book.
Oh, we did a maquette. Maquette. Yeah.
So the abridged, then you know.
And we also we do a maquette as we go along, simply because we want to get the feeling of, you know, flipping the pages and how the rhythm goes, you know.
But I know a lot of people work on computers, and so I don't know. You probably see them, do you, in the other books?
Yeah, to a certain extent.
I have got no idea how to work on a computer.
Well, the cover was done on the computer, and that was done by our son. I did a painting of Jekyll. Danusha did a painting of Hyde, and we asked him to do a kind of dissolve, like a filmic dissolve. And he actually enhanced it a bit by bringing in the lower teeth, because otherwise there'd only be the top row that you'd see, and I think it's quite effective. He's very good on the computer.
But the adaptation of The Master and Margarita was considerably more complicated then. Did the pair of you work together when it came to abridging it?
Well, we did talk to each other. We talked to each other, and every so often you said, "What do you think?" And I said, "What do you know?"
I think we knew we had to decide which bits were going in that way.
And we had a good idea of, you know, for instance, well, of course, that Jerusalem part went bang in the middle of Volans, you know, discussion on the park bench with those two guys from the theatre, so that was easy enough to slot in. And then, of course, the theatre part, which was really exciting, because suddenly becomes colour.
I think yours was more difficult, Andrew, because mine were those chapters, the pilot scenes, and then also the theatre. But then you had to decide what to put in and cut out from all the rest of it.
Yeah, because for instance, I really love all those scenes, you know, in that room, which kind of exists and doesn't exist, and you know, people leaving it and running away, and there's so many funny things going on in that room. I just had to decide on one or two scenes in it,
and then the ball scene, which
the ball scene, which Danusha would have loved to have done in a bigger way, but. But then we thought, you know, we'll show one image, and the rest of people can imagine.
We didn't have we didn't have enough pages really for that one. But so it was as if it was the beginning of the ball scene really, and then you quickly do the end. But that is a very important. I think that's one of the people in the actual book. I know that's one of the favourite part. People often say, "Oh, the ball scene is there." Favorite. There is a lot I've missed out, but there's a lot, but I think I condensed it to such a point with the most important things, I think, of the conversation between Pilot.
Because Pilot, I think we made him into quite a thoughtful person, which I think he must have been.
But this is Bulhakov's interpretation, isn't it, of what he...
Yeah, he was
a Jesuit. I think father was a Jesuit. Now, how can he be a Jesuit if he... If he had no, he was a theologian. I think his father, that he had a lot of he learnt a lot about I think religion through his dad.
And he was a doctor.
I think his father was, but I found it very interesting that I don't know. How do you think the drawings came? Because I don't know how they came out in there. You know, for the
I really like it.
So that was my very first thing. But you see, most people when they draw, they outline, and I didn't outline. When I paint it, because I paint it, you know, Andrew does outlines. The darker ones were, I wouldn't say easier to paint, but you have more contrast. And I think this was the very first lot I did, but it's to do with the conversation more than.
I really like it. I mean, I think you've really captured the texture of, you know, what I'd imagine.
The heat, and
the sand, and, you know, the dirt on the clothes.
Well, it's supposed to be like humid, hot. In the book, it's just that he. I mean, there are loads of things you miss. I mean, it does look a bit naive, but then that's the way I paint. There's nothing I can do about it. You know, although my other paintings are a bit more realistic, but I like putting into a story.
Yeah, I suppose for some people it would be a disappointment, our version, because, you know, they've built up their own vision of it, which is inevitable.
I suppose for a lot of people, because people are so hooked onto this book, and it's you meet so many people saying, this is my favourite book, this is my favourite book. And of course, they have their own
vision of it. Yes. But on the other hand, you know, the people who haven't read it would read ours and then think, "Oh, this is interesting," and then we'll read the original.
Well, exactly. I have to admit, I'd never actually come across it before. I read your version. I hope it introduces it to a new generation.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is part of the. I think that's part of the idea of the classic eye series.
And I know there are people who couldn't get into it as well either. So I think that would be something. But I know I have weaned myself off it by now. It has completely, because it was one of my favourite books, and it still is, but I think now I can at least think of other books and possibly have them as favourites. But after reading it, I feel sort of liberated in a funny sort of way, after doing this. But it's still great.
Strange, I just remembered in one of those clubs that you mentioned, we were talking to a set designer and a theatre director, do you remember, in Krakow, Skarżyński?
Yes, Swinarski. Very famous.
And Skarżyński actually gave me a comic book. He made a comic, designed and had a comic book published in the early 70s, or mid-70s this was. It was a comic book version of Julio Cortázar, you know, an Argentinian writer, quite highbrow, good short story writer. And unfortunately, I haven't got I must have lost it somewhere, but it's just come back to me, you know. Even though the comic book form wasn't popular at all then, I think it is now in Poland.
No, I only remember it from when I was young, comics, but I think it's growing, isn't it, this...
Oh, absolutely, appreciation of comics as sort of an offshoot of literature, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny, when I was at school, one of the texts for A-level was Songs of Innocence and Experience by Blake.
Oh.
And the edition we were given to study was the illustrated version, and there were people in our class saying, we should just have to look at the straight text, having to study art. That's not what we signed up for English to do.
Goodness.
For goodness sake, the two can work.
Of course.
It's interesting. I'm always interested what people imagine when people read, what they actually see. Because I know certain people, they don't... I know a few people who don't have a vision. I often wonder, do they just read the text and what do they see when they read the text?
Well, they must
some people don't actually want to read, so possibly they don't have a vision, you know.
Although,
do you think?
Well, I think we've moved into a sort of visual era now.
Yeah, definitely.
It's certainly changed.
Because I think books, for example, like, you know, Dickens, he described every single thing, colour, feel, everything, and so you could imagine it, but a lot of people now, they write very short stories, and so you have to really imagine it yourself. So the people who can't imagine, am I complicated?
Lose out, you mean?
No, I wonder what they see.
It's whether that's some lack of dialogue between the left hand side and the right hand side of the brain,
perhaps.
I don't know, it's interesting. So these sort of books, I'd imagine graphic would help people who probably, well, not help them, but may like them if they can't
imagine
images. Images, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're getting into complicated territory here, I think. We were thinking of doing a short book about our stay in our life.
Oh, a graphic novel. We've been contemplating.
Because it's disappeared, that world. We even missed going to an exhibition where they had all the pre
you know, what did a supermarket look like in communist Poland, or a milk bar,
which we experienced, and they had an exhibition, and our friends told us, and they said, you should regret it, because it's not there now.
Yeah.
It's gone.
And of course, the youngest generation actually hasn't experienced it at all. We take it for granted that they know all these things, but they don't, of course, because they have a new reality, new ideas, etc. But But, you know, very often, you know, people refer to Polish art as being surreal. But reality was surreal. I mean, it was bizarre. You know, if you you could be in a bus and suddenly you see a guy in an elegant coat and hat, wearing toilet paper on a string round his neck. You know, rolls of toilet paper, because he found a shop where you could buy toilet paper, which was a phenomenon. You know, in those days there was some shortages.
The most important thing for them, you know, other things could.
If you went into one of these art clubs or cafes, you know, you wouldn't be talking about Jean-Paul Sartre of existentialism, but you'd be talking about toilet paper.
I mean, you're thinking that really we, as thing, you know, obviously the Poles experience because they live there, but. We had some funny experiences being English, living there, and with our visas and so on. And for us, it was completely strange. But we were thinking of doing this book, so that because even from our start, it was
actually, you know,
so
we were sort of reminiscing. We were away, and last weekend we went to Canterbury or somewhere, and we were sitting in a restaurant, and suddenly we were reminiscing, and then we thought, well, maybe we'll make a good.
Graphic novels.
Particularly, you know, with graphic novels nowadays.
Autobiography is very popular.
Very popular, you know, and I mean, when I look at Chris Ware, you know, it's interesting.
Emma's doing biographies on Jay anyway, but we're doing some
things
for her.
Yeah, or famous Johnny Cash and famous people.
Well, you're
people.
Famous as a artist. No, but I think we really wouldn't mind doing it because...
I think it could be funny.
No, but we have got some funny stories. Which I think would... Exactly, for people, because we're reaching the age when we were young, and now
our reality was totally different, and one kind of doesn't realize that quite, and so it could be quite amusing actually. So we might
draw your posters on the walls that were around at that time.
For more info about Andre and Danusha's work, please visit our blog at www.panelborders.wordpress.com. Thanks for listening.